Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
I'm Derek Riley. I'm with Charlie Smith, and welcome to Dirty Water, an hour of swinging discourse where facts are really yanked out of our kimonos. Today's guest on Dirty Water was an Australian child prodigy. His glittering teen career culminating in a movie in 2006 that was named after his signature double-grabbed air shove it. Or was it a board varial? Don't know, I'll ask. Our guest busted his legs three times, 2011, 13 and 15, and a week ago released his first major film in 14 years. Its name a tweak on that wild hillbilly branch of Protestantism, with its baptisms, holy fire, speaking in tongues, and imminent second coming of Jay-Z. Despite his years in the spotlight, our guest is only just on the other side of 30, is a daddy to a multitude of chillin', and still surfs with an emphasis above the lip. He is, of course, Mr. Wade Goodall. All right. Welcome to Dirty Water, Wade.
Thanks.
Welcome to Dirty. Welcome to Dirty Fucking Water.
I can't believe we got you. To be honest, you now is the most famous surf celebrity on the entire face of the earth.
The most ridiculous statement I've heard in a while.
I mean, it's true. It's all I've just had to talk about Pentecostal till my eyes are bleeding. It's all anybody wants to talk about.
Well, that's just a big compliment, really. That's really cool. It has been super positive. It's like, yeah, it was just a bit of a trip, really, how it's all come together and how we had to launch it during this whole weird stuff. And actually some of the feedback of like how it's made people feel about surfing and feel better during all this weird stuff. It's been like real cool.
What would you have done without COVID? I mean, did you have like a plan to like tour it and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, we were going to party for a while. That was going to be fun. We were going to do like a whole thing. I don't know. Because it was like the first full-length surf film I've been a part of for a little bit. I kind of wanted to go back and like bring it around to people. I always loved that growing up when someone put a movie on and like it would come to your place and just mix with normal, like not normal people, but mix with like people you wouldn't meet otherwise. And like just show them your surf film. And I don't know. It's more, I guess it's like a little throwback because it's like long format surf. It is a throwback. So might as well take it back to like actually premming with people and hanging out and having a few beers and talking surf because surf's pretty fun. Lots of people like it.
It's pretty wild. It's been 14 years since your last feature film, Passion Pop, 2006.
I loved Passion Pop.
And it's so rad because I had to check your age about four different times. I thought, fuck, you must be 45 by now. That was you're barely over 30. Only 32 or 33 or something. Huh?
Yeah, 33. I feel 40 something in the. I got a skin check the other day and I'm like mind blown, like the exterior is looking that crook but holding in there. I definitely feel like Passion Pop was like a 30 years ago. Somehow this whole carcass is holding in.
You must have got a lot of people telling you to do a Passion Pop, huh?
Not really, it kind of died. Hey.
I still saw people still trying them.
Yeah, people are still trying them, but like I don't know. I kind of like hid from it a little bit. It was such a whole weird thing. Like that video is like looking back on your school shit. It's like so cringy. It's like a white big hat on, a bit crooked and stuff. And like, I'm like socially awkward as it is, as like a full grown man. So back in that time, I was just like, just blacking out. Mumbling utter nonsense. So that's like so gnarly to look back on that thing.
Oh, it's a classic. A classic though. Monumental achievement, Passion Pop.
So since we got you, a Passion Pop, because I'm not a skater, I sort of call it near shove it, or is it a board varial? I don't get it.
I don't know. I'm just a surfer, so it's just
you're a very good skater too, aren't you?
No. I used to skate when I was young, but then I was never really that great. I just really liked it. Once I started hurting my legs and stuff, I just can't do it anymore. I've got like no spring. I've just got metal legs, so.
Yeah, are they titanium reinforced? What do you got in there?
Yeah, I've got titanium from on my right side, my hip to my knee, and my knee to my ankle, and then on my left side, my knee to my ankle, titanium.
Do you feel like Wolverine?
Nah.
You kind of look like Wolverine, though.
Yeah, I'm pretty hairy, but that's about it. Guys, I feel like shit, basically.
Do you really feel like shit? Because you've broken your legs three times, I think, 2010, 11, and maybe 13?
Yeah.
And so how does it feel, like your legs now? Are you constantly aching? And if it was cold water, do the things fucking throb?
Yeah, that's like a big thing. People always hit me up, like, do you feel the cold and stuff? But I don't, like, I'm pretty warm-blooded as it is. So it only when the cold gets real deep, like, you know, in a surf, when you're in somewhere cold, like San Fran or like, anyway, thick wetties, and you like start to get that deep cold where you start going numb and stuff. When I get that, I just don't defrost for like hours. But that's the only thing I've felt. I like don't set off alarms, and yeah, I don't. I drink a lot of milk now because everyone tells me to do that. Because everyone's so smart.
make your bones strong.
Hey? Yeah, this I don't know. This is like.
You ever see a cow with a broken leg? Never.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you break your leg? Can you go through each break and explain how you broke your leg each time?
Yeah, first one was just like a really small backside barrel, and I was just all compressed on my front foot, and it bottomed out, and then the shockwave shot up as I was leaning on my front foot, and it just snapped my shin, compound fracture. And then the next one was I jumped out of the lip on one and didn't penetrate properly and got straight back up into the lip and went over feet first into dry reef.
Oh.
And that one I felt my outside of my ankle got squashed up to my shoulder. So I got pinned like that, and that snapped my femur. And then the last one was just like a shit little jump I did, and I landed like kind of like tuck kneed as the backwash hit same time, and just force snap my shin again.
Jesus, what's the pain like, that one where your ankle hit your shoulder?
Yeah, femur was deep. Femur was really bad. I think the first one was the gnarliest because it was probably snapped out of the skin and stuff, and it was dangling like crazy, and the movement was like really bad. But the femur was just like this deep, like constant pain.
Did it make you think twice about taking off, or is it still in the back of your head, or no? Is it just is what it was? And
yeah, totally. I like the first two, I was like, I don't give a fuck anymore. Like, I'll still try shit. And then the third one, I've been kind of like, holy shit, I've been hurt for like 20 years. Like, I kind of like surfing. I want to keep doing it. I don't want to be like laid up anymore because it sucks. So like, I am a bit more aware of it this time. Whereas the other time I was like, fuck it, I don't care. But now it's just like, might just not try this jump because I've got no speed. That kind of thing. But yeah, it slowed me down a little bit this last time. For sure.
It didn't seem to slow you down too much in Pentecostal because yeah, it's a tube fest. For a wave to be tubing, it has to be fairly significant.
Yeah. Well, it's just like hunting good waves that whole time. I like hadn't had a chance to film on anything for a while. So I was like, I really wanted to find the best waves possible in that like time frame. And that ends up tubing a lot when you're looking at that kind of thing. Not really hunting, like, oh, that's the most primo onshore. I'm gonna fly to the other side of the world for that like chop up section.
There's a 2-foot wind swell hitting Africa in 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So good for passion pops in Namibia next week.
Hey, here's a funny little thing about passion. This is a funny little thing about passion pops, because in 2006 I had Stab magazine, and we had it on the cover of the magazine.
Yeah.
Right. And it's stuck to the cover. So you bought the magazine for $7.50 and you get the Passion Pop for free. But there's and all the surf mags used to do it, but we had this sort of great confidence trick thing happening. All the magazines did it. So you'd have to, because we were selling ads that were selling 30,000 mags or 40,000 mags. Everyone did, but no one sold more than 10,000 mags. So when a company wanted to put their DVD on the cover of your mag, you had to pretend you had 30 or 40,000 mags. So you would have 30 or 40,000 DVDs arriving at the printer, and the printer would say, fuck, mate, you're printing 7,000 mags. What do you want us to do with these 33,000 DVDs? And every magazine company used to have this system of how to incinerate the DVDs.
No way.
Because you couldn't burn 30,000 at once, because fuck, you'd set Melbourne on light or Sydney, wherever your magazine was getting printed. And I remember just these crates of Passion Pop going up.
That's insane. You've caused
more pollution. you've caused more carbon pollution than Kelly Slater, mate.
Yeah, all damn all that nonsense. Shove it. That's ridiculous.
What about the Cosby?
How did you incinerate him? Like,
they have to burn excess paper, I guess, in magazines. So what they do is they'd burn 500 a day or something for
just at home.
Yeah. Making a romantic fire, Passion Pop.
the fumes, the plastic fumes are beautiful.
Yeah,
it's an aphrodisiac.
It's because I remember Rusty once. They used to give their all their movies to Waves, and that's like, we have to give it to Waves. They're doing 40,000, and we'd all work there, and we're doing 5 or 10,000, whatever. So they're burning, I think, 60,000 DVDs a year if they're doing 2 DVD drops. Glory days, mate. The glory days of print magazines.
That's such a cool insight. I never knew that. Everyone celebrates those times so hard, but when you find out the real deal,
it's great because plastic. You have
it's like vaping. Paper. It's like vaping. It's like down the track.
everyone got lung cancer from the free DVDs. Yeah. What about the Cosby? You still loosen the Cosby every now and again?
What's that?
That was the floater in Chop Pop Out, and there was a Beach Creek commentator, Mickey Buttonshaw, named it the Cosby because the wave thinks you're going to do an innocent floater, but you end up doing something ugly at the end, like a Cosby.
So sinister.
You're a sinister man.
Oh, fuck. Still trying them. They're super fun. I just like trying that stuff on waves. Like, there's some waves and some sections that you can only do something stupid or something little like that. So that's where like the Passion Pop came from, and that's where that floater shove, floater like ollie out came from. It's like, what can I do on this section? I don't want to do a floater.
And then you think immediately, Cosby. Here comes the Cosby.
Yeah, I don't think I've thought about Cosby much in my life.
Hey, so talk to us about
might be from my childhood.
So talk to us about Shane Fletcher. He made Pentecostal with you. You guys are tight. What's the process? What was the vision? How did that come about? Because it cost you a bit of money.
Yeah. Did you guys have a budget from Vans, or did you have to pull from your own pocket?
Yeah. No. It was Vans all the way. We don't have pockets. it was kind of an independent idea. Like, I just had the idea, the aesthetics, and like the just like a background art for it, basically. I was like, I just wanted to stay in Oz and do this little poster up, and that's where it came from. And then I knew Shane could do it really, really well, because he's an amazing filmmaker, and he works real hard too. So I approached him with it before I approached Vans, just to like have like someone else ready to go and like a proven filmmaker and stuff, because coming to Vans with it, just me, like, who am I to ask for a budget for a major surf film? Like, I've never done that in my life. So it was much better with him on my side. And I wanted him to do it anyway. And then Vans, just, we sort of talked about it for a while. And the more I talked about it, the more the plan came together, and it just, they eventually said, yeah, let's go for it, and gave us a budget. And we did it. Took ages.
What was the time frame on it? And did you go over?
We were gone for a year, and then that whole year, we didn't really get too many waves. Like, I'm such a shit swell forecaster, really horrendous. And I just made a few mistakes, and then that kind of cost us. And we got to the end of the period, like the budget and the time frame, and basically had two waves of Dane Reynolds. That was worth was up to the like level that I had imagined, you know. So I was like, it's a two-wave video, but it's real good. But, even in this day and age, it needs to be at least a minute and a half or something. So we can, like, but so like I just like nervously asked for an extension, and then the next year really came together. It was like it went from really pushing shit uphill to like that P-pass swell, and once we had that, it was just kind of like, this is such a good foundation, and every trip after that kind of came together. So it took about 2 years all up,
which, I mean, that's not bad though for actually location filming and all that. 2 years seems pretty short.
Yeah, we went pretty hard, but yeah, it was a big learning curve, but it was really cool.
So how did the budget thing work? Did you get a ton of cash, or not a ton of cash, but a relative ton of cash put into your bank account, and then you just kept spending it until it ran out, to the ATM card didn't work anymore? Or did you have to save all your receipts and send them to Vans and have that?
Yeah, it was just, we kind of like managed it on our ends, and we were super careful with it, and we didn't ask for much. Like, we didn't, it wasn't like a, I felt self-conscious to ask for too much, because it was kind of a test in a way anyway of my capabilities in that kind of realm. So like, it wasn't like a psycho budget, but it was like, it was just enough. And I ended up, we both put a lot of our own time and money into it also, just stuff, extra stuff that we just felt needed to happen. That it wasn't band responsibility, stuff like that. So we just micromanaged like our side of things and Shane's side of things, and then Fans helped us out booking the flights and stuff, like if we had to get Reynolds in and that.
It's funny Vans now is kind of become the bulwark of surf culture. There is so much great surf culture stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, the stuff with Dylan Graves, the weird wave stuff, and now Pentecostal. They've sort of, before it was, you know, Quicksilver, Billabong, Rip Curl, whatever, but now Vans has become almost the number one surf brand.
I think so too. I think it stems to like the way they built the whole surf team. They came in late, and then they built it on personality and they weren't so much chasing the next world champ and stuff like that. And I feel like that builds personality and like a core love for the sport. Like if you look at everyone on the team, they kind of just done their own thing forever, and they're still doing it because, I don't know, there's just something about them all, like Nathan Fletcher, Dane Reynolds, like Dylan Graves, Weird Waves, the Goodangs. It's just like, we just love surfing. Like,
it seems like everybody sticks around forever too. I mean, it's not like the hot new signing and then whatever, 3-year contract. I mean, it feels like everybody's been there for, I mean, you've been there for the last 50 years.
Yeah. I mean, it's a nice feeling for sure. I haven't felt that in any other company, that they actually like you and stuff.
Do you have a need to be liked, mate?
And they're embracing it. It would help. It would definitely be nice. But no, just like embrace, like supportive. It's a real supportive place. And that's like, that's a productive place really. And feels good.
Is that because of Van? Did you deal with Van much?
Pardon?
You deal with Van much, Vandora?
Yeah, I see him around. I don't deal with him very much. Like, we don't really have to. It's just, he's always at all the social events, cooking up and stuff like that. I don't know. I just, I'm not really a very upfront person in crowds anyway. So I don't know if he's ever seen me.
How shy you were.
Well, I'm not as drunk anymore, Derek.
everything's harder without booze, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a bit of a social theory for me. It worked for a while.
Worked on Passion Pop. Hey, so in Pentecostal, when we put it on Beach Grid, I told readers to come for your wild takeoff into the tube on the opener, and to stay for Reynolds' wild backside hangers, and brave little Harry Bryant's Indo beats and the fine soundtrack. But for you, what are the big bangers in the film? What should people look out for?
I always love Dane surfing. I think some of the jumps, I know you've seen him at Macaroni's before and stuff, but I just never really get sick of it.
Like when you're watching it, when you put the little markers in the clips and you said, fuck, that bit has to go there, that bit has to go there. Because the takeoff was a fundamental one, huh?
Yeah, for sure. That session was really cool and really scary and just like a bit of a goal to get waves at that place. It was sick to see Harry in some bigger slabs and stuff because he's on his way up real hard and he surfs so, so good in so many different conditions. So like after seeing him coming up on the Sunshine Coast as a little kid, bowl cut, and now he's like a mullet, like he drives a speedboat with tribals on it and he has a mullet and he's like just charging it and he's like always on fire and in and out of the water. It's just like it's so funny, the man he's become. And it was like such a blessing that the movie took an extra year because that's when they signed him. And I was like, well, that's just like such another amazing addition to the vid to have Harry. And I just tried to get as much camera on Harry as I could throughout that process. So it's good to see a bit more broad surfing of Haz. And then, yeah, some good Dane stuff. And I don't know, I feel like everyone's pretty equal in it. It's just like we just documented what we did. We just went on proper surf trips and hung out, and it wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't anything.
Do you sit in the ghetto bay, like, as it's going, or do you just get, like, rough cuts and then opine on what you think?
No, I sat there the whole time.
Do you like the process of editing, or is it just you want to pull your hair out?
It's heaps I don't understand. Like Shane pressed all the buttons. I was just literally sitting next to him on a beanbag for like 2 months. But that was because I was like, I wasn't overbearing, but I was really clear with my aesthetic. And I had a real consciousness not to waste anyone's time. So that's why I spent so much time with him on like transition wise and stuff not running over and the music and the vision, like keeping people captivated. We worked so hard on that side of things, which I don't think has happened in a while in a surf vid. Just not that people aren't doing good things. It's just like people mainly doing like advertising or just surfing real good. No one's really trying in that kind of aspect of filmmaking anymore. There's no budget and shit. Mm-hmm. So how can they? And yeah, it's all pretty pretty quick fire at the moment.
So can you describe your aesthetic?
I wanted like real Australian tones, like real deep greens and dark blues, and I kind of got my color palette from, have you seen The Proposition?
Yeah
film The Proposition.
I actually interviewed Nick Cave about it years ago.
Oh really?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, in London. Name drop. Oops. Sorry about that. I just dropped Nick Cave's name into it. Sorry. Spoke to Nick. Oops.
He has a major part in this video as well, actually.
Oh, really? What's Nick Cave's part? Like,
the whole name came from his song Brompton Obituary. So he says Pentecostal in it. And it was just one of those moments. I don't know if you get them, but sometimes I hear a word and I have to like write it down and kind of like an idea offshoots off that. So that's where Pentecostal came from, was that Nick Cave song.
And that's because Nick Cave loves fucking hillbillies and baptisms and holy fire and speaking in tongues and the, you know, imminent second coming of Jay-Z.
Yeah, I love dark Australiana. That's why I love Nick, and that's why I like have that kind of underlying theme throughout the whole video. I wanted a mix of like Australian cult cinema with a color palette that matches like an updated camera, like like the proposition and stuff like that. So
what's your favorite cult Australian film?
Wake and Fright. Feeling wise, I think that anxious nature of that film is just insane. I love when I love feeling like bad stuff's going to happen constantly and it doesn't. I think
that's a full snowball, that film, huh?
Yeah. And that's a big part of traveling in like outback Australia or anywhere like that. That underlying feeling is pretty full on. Like you drive through some places, you don't feel safe. That's like, in regards to like people and places, but also like some of the nature when you're out in the, like agoraphobic nature of Australia. It's powerful and scary at times. So I wanted that underlying theme as well throughout the video. So like Wake and Fright, Walkabout. I really like Walkabout as well. Picnic and Hanging Rock, a bit more traditional, but I like that one. The Cars That Ate Paris, that's also another good one. And then there's like a lot like back roads and stuff that there's a lot about the whole
Backroads is a doozy. That's with Gary Foley, huh?
Yeah, Backroads is amazing. I mean, there's a lot of that period that is, it's kind of like, that period is like the relationship between white man and black man. There's a lot of that in that period. And then there's, and then the rest are kind of like almost like the precursor to Mad Max vibe. That's like the Cars That Ate Paris and that kind of thing. It's just like a real funny time in cinema in Australia.
I love that you mentioned Walkabout, because I can push my book. I did a book on David Gulpilil.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to go to Booktopia or Book Depository, Gulpilil by Derek Riley, $29.95, hardcover, beautiful book. Talks all about Walkabout, all the secrets, everything that everyone wants to know about Gulpilil and Walkabout. And for anyone who hasn't watched Wake and Fright, it's this classic film set in Australia in 1971, made by, I think, a British director or an American director. But it stars the great American actor Donald Pleasance and a British actor Gary Bond and Jack Thompson. And it's a fucking wild story of a man who is a school teacher in country Australia. And back then in the 60s, you used to have to put a bond up for, I think, about £2,000 or something. And if you left the country, the shitty country town, within 3 years, you didn't get your bond back. And this guy's about to go on his summer holidays in Sydney, go to the beach, and he gets stuck in this small country town, loses all his money, and then he tries to win the bond money, and he loses it, and his life just goes to complete shit, and he tries to kill himself. And there's a great scene where he fucks this chicken vomits on her. Remember that?
Yeah, that's crazy. It's pretty crazy. That roo hunting scene, like that's real footage.
Yeah, real footage. Proper roo hunters.
Yeah. Everything about that movie is crazy.
And it's funny because in your travels for Pentecostal, there's a part of Australia you go to which has fucking full Wake and Fright vibes, huh?
Yeah, there's a bunch. I've loved hanging out in those kind of places the last few years. It's been really busy. I like to come home and hang with my family. But the whole surfing scene on the East Coast and stuff is getting a bit busy, you can say. So I just like it tapping out. It's been a good few years of that, and like I did a real conscious effort to start it because I like did Indo since Passion Pop pretty much, and that place is too much for me now too, so it's probably getting old, and it's probably like I feel like pretty content, like I'm not like frothing at the mouth for surfing as much, like I'm quite content, like I love to chase waves and get good waves and stuff, but I'm not like, I don't know, feel like I have to prove anything, or like I don't know, I just don't have a crazy fire anymore, so those kind of trips are better for me because I can just go and surf, get waves, because that's what I'm getting at around here. I can't really get that many waves because fucking it's really hot competition. Yeah.
Do you have movie number two or the follow-up to Pentecostal already brewing?
No, not really, to be honest. That took it out of me for sure. It was so fun though. And at the end of it, like it's been so positive, but at the end of it, after seeing every millisecond for so long, like getting so deep into every aspect of it, like I was just so desensitized, and I just was not. I was proud to finish it, but I wasn't sure if it was just boring or not. But it's been it's been really exciting since it launched, and the positive feedback and stuff. How many people have actually watched it, and people that I know that don't even surf have watched it, stuff like that. So it's like, it's cool that it's like, it's branching out. And like, I just don't know what's going to happen with all this pandemic and stuff. So it's really unsure times. I was pretty anxious at the start about it all. And now it's kind of, it's just a weird normality, like at the moment with schools going back and we're surfing around here and filming a little bit, but I don't know about international travel. I don't know. It's really unsure times, so I can't really plan anything. But I don't really have grand plans to become a surf filmmaker as much.
Well, it's a cruel life.
Yeah, ask Chaz about budgeting.
I just like creative. And I did that movie because I had an idea and I believed in that idea and fell in love with that idea. So that's why I went through with it. And that's like, that's what I try and do with everything. And that keeps me learning, keeps me trying new things. And, I think, I don't want to just do that again right now. I want to put some time back in with my family too. Like, they were so supportive through that whole thing and having two kids and being away so much and having my mind on that for so long. I kind of owe it to my family a lot too, to try and get some time back.
Tell you what you can do. You can start writing about surfing. You can do that right from home. You can sit under.
don't listen to me, man. It's a kind of a business.
So everything's hard.
Yeah,
everything's hard.
Everything's hard, but nothing's hard, mate. As long as you got sweet oxygen coming through your nostrils and all your limbs are still attached to you. Pretty good. Hey, so what would you regard as
I'm not like putting the whole surf filmmaking to the side though. Like, it's just until I have something I believe in, I won't do it.
So what was the last great surf film release in your opinion? For me, it was Dear Suburbia. And there's kind of parallels between Pentecostal and Dear Suburbia. And it almost feels like made by different people, but it still has a similar vibe, has sort of a darker vibe.
Yeah.
While still being very, very surf.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a good vibe. Lots of places in that movie we went to as well, with King Island and stuff like that. So definitely has parallels. And Kai is an amazing filmmaker. And yeah, I think that it's been he's been missed lately. So
do you think Dear Suburbia was the last great film release before Pentecostal? I can't think. I mean, there's Reynolds' stuff, which is amazing.
But yeah.
It's generally not long form.
Not long form, not without talking and stuff. I feel like a lot of the long forms in the last few years have been a lot of, like, maybe a sure sign that there hasn't been much going on.
Hey Wade, last time we spoke, you told me that Chopi was your favorite wave. Is that still true?
Yeah. No, probably not. I haven't been back there since the Billabong days, pretty much. So it's changed. I like P-Pass the most now. Have to be my favorite. Yeah, I think that's been my new favorite in the last few years. It's just like, I had a good run, really, and I haven't really scored as consistently anywhere as that place lately.
So what thrills you about the joint?
I just like the island. It's real piratey. It's still pretty raw. You can be a bit naughty, in a chilled way, I guess. Like, you can, there's like heaps of cocktails at bars and you can get like joints and stuff and really fresh fish, and it's just like a pretty cool vibe there. And then the waves are just insane. I just like the fact that it's a perfect wave, but you also have to really surf it. You have to read it and attack it. So like, some waves you could take off, close your eyes and get barreled the whole way. But then the next wave you'll have to it's like sprinting as fast as you can to jump on the back of a bull and then survive. So it's just like always interesting. And every swell direction is different too, so they'll do different things on the end. So it's just kind of a mix between like Indo and Australia. It's like a perfect Indo wave, but some slabby elements mixed in.
And it has a great, then you like, you just a great chip shot.
Kettle it in the boat. It does. When it gets a bit bigger, it moves out to that rolling bit. And yeah, that's cool. That gets like, yeah, on the on that west bowl. And when it gets big, it's pretty much just the chip shot, which is like hard to catch too sometimes. But it looks easy, but it's actually quite a big body of water. So it's like you've got to be in the right spot, especially because if we ride, well, I don't know about everyone, but I ride really small boards out there, like a 6.0, no matter what. So I do tend to miss a couple, but on the wave, it's nothing feels better.
Is there, have you had any interesting moments in the end bowl? Because it's a bit of a no man's land there if you fall off, huh?
Yeah, you get pretty rolled for sure. Like every time I've been there, someone gets hurt. It's just like any wave that's like not a piece of piss. You just get rolled sometimes. It's nice, I think. Like it's like this little swell that just hit the East Coast. Like it's just so nice to get held down a bit. Or like just getting smashed is just as fun as like making waves sometimes. As long as you don't break yourself. It's like that adrenaline. You don't get that much in day-to-day life.
Another great thing about Ponape is your Continental Airlines plane lands there, and the joint you stay at generally is about 200 metres from the airport, huh?
Yeah, super close. They moved it around to the marina. I stay at Ponape Surf Club with Alois. They moved it down to a marina, which is like super nice, and there's a sushi restaurant right there. But it used to be like literally you could walk out of the airport straight to your cabin, like right next. They lived next door. That was pretty funny setup.
Yeah, I remember getting in a pickup, loading all the boards, all the bags, getting in the pickup and driving for about literally 10 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. The camp's moved a few times since then. It went in this other one that was like up a river, and it was so dilapidated and sketchy and fallen down, and it had this like hilarious sushi train at the bottom of it and stuff. That place was pretty cool. It almost felt haunted, but had some funny times there. But I think it fell down. They got out just in. It's all plush now. It's really nice, right down on the river, right down in the jet marina.
Oh, wow.
Really nice, really high end compared to what you would have seen. It's like crazy now. Really
yeah, it was pretty bush league and dirty when I was there, but it was great. You know, it was right on the
good, yeah.
Built on the limestones, yeah. And you know, we'd always have fresh fish, and then when I was there,
when it comes down to it, I'll sleep on the. I'll sleep on the gravel to surf that place.
Pretty much did in the early days, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
Hey, in your travels, and you've surfed a lot of ledges and a lot of slabs, whatever, have you ever truly believed you're about to die?
No, I haven't got that like cut snake attitude, I don't reckon. Like when I'm surfing waves like that, I'm like just scared. And and I'm looking for waves that I can make. I don't like... I see people win like heavy waves and stuff that just go anything. And like, I love watching that, but I just have never really had that in me. I'm pretty selective. So I guess the ones that I go, I usually have pretty good confidence that I can make it.
Are you confident in your ability to make not anything, but almost anything?
No, never have been. I still go down. I still go for a surf every day, not knowing whether I could even surf like good today. I just have never really like been that informed or like consistent, I guess. It's just like, oh, see what happens today, eh? I guess that's like a good part of like just not being a competitive surfer or like a high-end surfer. You're just like, you're a bit normal or something. I don't know. I've never looked at anything and said like I can do that. I just like go give it a go. Don't have like that initial confidence.
Have you ever gone through periods where you've had these crises of confidence where you just are convinced you can't surf anymore?
Yeah, for sure. But then the next day will be different. There'll be like a glimmer of hope, and like, I don't know, I think I've been, that was more when I was young and I was like a bit more just gung-ho, I guess. I wanted to surf really good. And if I didn't, I had no reason why I shouldn't be. Like, I was like real mad that I wasn't. But since the leg injuries and stuff, there's like so many periods, there's like really long, long periods of time where I could literally not do much. I could only do, I'm real comfortable with like if a day's not working out anymore, because it's just like, that's just the way it is, you know?
Does it frustrate you? Do you come home and go, fuck, I'm done?
Yeah, for sure. I don't say I'm done. I just say, fuck. Like, I just love surfing still. Like, it pisses me off to surf shit, but then, like, it doesn't stop me from liking surfing. It's just, like, pissed off at yourself for a second. You're just like, you're okay. Go home.
Do you analyze it, though? Do you analyze what went wrong? Do you go, fuck, if I just did that, maybe I'll...
I don't know. No, I just go on feeling. I don't know. I just take, like... each surf, there is shit I know now automatically because I've been doing it for so long, but it's not like I'm not real analytical or anything. I'm still kind of just going with it and seeing what happens. I think that's maybe why I am so inconsistent sometimes. Like, I just don't give it much thought, just try and feel it.
Do you have you ever had a fear of, do you have a fear of being broke?
Being broke? Yeah, for sure. I support a family, you know. Like, I don't have a fear personally of family. That's a big concern for sure, because I was in food on the table. So money is in my head, came into play for sure.
Do you think about money a lot?
I think exactly the same amount as everyone else. When you're paying your bills every week and you've got to think about money, right? Fuck, it's a normal thing. But... yeah, I don't really stress on the future or whatever. It's just like, do what I have to do to support my family.
So you moved from the Sunshine Coast to Byron, what, 10 years ago?
It's just about 7.
So you would have seen a few changes in that old hippie town, huh?
Yeah, well, I don't live in Byron. I live in Bangalore, so it's a bit different. I would never live in Byron. I like having it there, but I don't really like it as a whole. I never saw it in those glory hippie days. It sounded pretty cool, but I don't think it's that at all. I think it's a whole new thing now. It's just pure tourists and backpackers now. It's kind of, the prices have gone crazy, so it's drove all the local kids out to the hills, and mainly everyone, all the originals are kind of in the hills now. It's just like a little theme park in there, I guess.
So what's it like to go surfing in Byron Bay? In 2020?
Pure novelty, really. I don't really surf in there much. I like, because I'm up in the hill, I can get in the highway in 2 minutes and I'm either like up New Bruns or down Lennox Ballina. I don't regularly go into Byron that often anymore. It's just a bit crowded. I think the pass is kind of fun to take the kids and stuff, but I really try and go surf places where there's no one. It's kind of scary though with the sharks thing and stuff. But
I was gonna say, do you ever bump in any great whites?
I've seen a few for sure. We got swirled by one the other day, but it's like, and then it's a weird comfortability. Like that first year when everyone was getting bitten and stuff, it was super, super angsty. Like, it was so scary. But now it's kind of like a bit of an adjustment. You're just kind of like super aware, trust your feelings and stuff. You know, when you're just out there and you have these gut feelings sometimes, you're like something, kind of listen to that a lot. And I am, yeah. But still, like, I'll still go surfing in the middle of nowhere by myself, but it just doesn't feel that comfortable for sure. But it's better than getting snagged.
So what happened the other day?
We just had a thing. I was with Connor O'Leary and another guy, Shags from Ballina, and it's been really fishy. And just the three of us kind of paddled out in a triangle, and there's this big swirl just came in between us. Big movement. One of the scary points. It's like when you don't see it, that's not that cool. But it's just been so much fish activity lately. It's like, feels like it's coming into a time when Hopefully nothing happens, but we might start seeing some action.
It's rad because they had the smart drum lines, I think, from Evans Head to Ballina and yeah. Or Lennox maybe, and the fisheries department tagged 331 great whites, I think, in 6 or 12 months.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, eh?
There's a lot of big ships cruising around, huh?
Yeah, that's the day to day.
That's life the bathtub.
Yeah, it's a pretty critical bathtub at the moment.
Just finish up. So Pentecostal is sort of one of the coolest things in surf right now. But to you, what's the coolest fucking thing in surfing right now?
It's a hard thing, eh? I don't feel like connected to surfing as a whole. It's like there's so many little things, but there's no like standout cool thing. Surfing is so big. It's crazy now. And there's so many different kinds of people doing it that there's like good points in everything and there's bad points in everything. I've been really digging, like, I guess, how proactive a lot of people have been about standing up for the environment. I've seen a huge shift in it being like anyone that did it is a fucking hippie and whatever, like, you know, that whole like doesn't affect me, doesn't worry me, like I feel like that mentality's gone, and it's more like there's like a lot of people standing up for, whether it's like drilling in the Bight or that development down Manana, or just a real coming together of people just saying like, nah, this shit isn't cool. And the whole surf community as a whole has started to stand up for a lot of things, and I've been digging that for sure. But then like, fuck, what else? I don't know, I just feel a shift. This is going to be crazy to see what comes of this whole thing. Surfing was like so world tour orientated for the last few years, and without that happening this year, it's just going to be interesting to see. And that's why it was such a blessing to be able to do this film just before all this, is because hopefully it inspires people to like start trying that kind of filmmaking again. Because growing up surfing, watching films was like every afternoon, and all those films were celebrating surfing, not individuals. They were celebrating surf travel with your buddies and stuff, instead of like a marketing campaign, LinkedIn, you know, like I really would love to see a resurgence of that kind of thing rather than anything. I just would like to see more pure surf films. So hopefully some people have the time now to go do that, because there's people not on the world tour, all the best surfers. They're the ones with the budgets, they're the ones that with the talent. So hopefully we can see some people branch out and go out of their norm and try. Because, like, how good was it? I don't know, growing up, to see, like, all videos with Tom Carroll and stuff, like the best of the best were the ones making the films. I'd like to see it go back to that, for sure.
All right, mate. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, no worries. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.